Hi, how's everybody doing? Good, good. First off, I'd like to thank everybody for making the trip out here. I know some of you traveled some long distances to be with us today, so I definitely appreciate that. Also, I'd like to say thank you to Chris and Dale for joining me on this panel to discuss kind of lobbying at the state level and what that entails. My specific experience is, of course, with Colorado, and as many of you know, we did find our pathway to legalization through a constitutional amendment. But of course, we've had a lot of work to do since that was passed back in November of 2012. After passing the bill, to something that Dell said earlier, the state of Colorado knew that they had to have an inclusive, open, and transparent conversation around this issue of legalization. So immediately following the legalization of Amendment 64, the passage of Amendment 64, the state leaders decided to form working groups that consisted of a wide variety of stakeholders. We're talking health officials, elected officials, politicians, lobbyists, and we also had hash makers at the table, folks with dreadlocks and, you know, folks that were engaged into, you know, making BHO products illegally at the time. They were involved in these conversations to ultimately create the rulemaking, or at least create the guidance that legislators needed to create the rulemaking process for Amendment 64. First off, whenever you're working with your state, regardless if it's post-legalization or prior to legalization, you want to make sure that you're understanding the process of how the bill is moving through the state legislature. This could be done simply by contacting your representative of your district, whether that's your senator or your House representative, and asking them, hey, what's the process and how a bill is actually passed in the Colorado or Nebraska state legislature? And of course, they'll provide you with all the information that you'll need, because a lot of people expect that once a bill, you know, hits the Senate floor or the House floor, there's a lot of action that can be done, you know, to prevent that from moving forward or actually amend the language to that. That's not the case. A lot of the work is done in the committees, of course, and so familiarizing yourself with the actual process will give you a leg up in regard to actually having input on a lot of these legislative efforts. So I urge you to make sure that you're in communication with your representative, and that just comes in the form of an introductory email just saying, hey, my name is Kevin Mammology, I live in your district, I would just like to touch base and learn more about the legislative process here in our state. More than likely you'll get an aide passed, your email will be passed along to an aide, but nonetheless somebody will follow up with you, at least provide some guidance on how to pursue or track or participate in the legislative process there in your state. One of the main concerns that we had in Colorado right out of the gate was balancing the need for public safety, but also being considerate of the need for safe access to affordable marijuana. So through these working groups that I just referenced, we were able to put together a recommendation that moved to the state legislature, which ultimately became the recommendations for 1284, which was the first piece of legislation to regulate marijuana in Colorado. Along with, you know, learning the process in which legislation is passed, you know, it's good to know who the players are in the state that you're working in. There's plenty of reform groups that are active besides just normal DPA, MPP, SSDP, the Harm Reduction Action Center, several other organizations that are, you know, sympathetic to the legalization movement. So, you know, it's good to reach out to them as well while you're on the ground to understand maybe where they're at on these specific pieces of legislation. Because I know how intimidating it can be for a lot of people that don't do this on a regular basis to, you know, just throw themselves into the shark pit, or, you know, the shark tank, so to speak, in regard to navigating the channels that exist within each state legislature. So reaching out to some other folks that are active on specific legislation is a great way to say, hey, where are we at? You know, can we support you in any way, support your efforts, or maybe combine our, you know, chapter with what you're doing at the state level. Although, you know, the groups that I just named all have different priorities, there's ways to find common grounds. One of the specific cases that I like to reference was last year we had a proposal in the State House kind of going toward, you know, looking to regulate marijuana, keep it out of the hands of children, protect children, that general argument. But anyhow, we found a lot of common ground with MPP and the DPA to come together to ultimately defeat the bill on its second reading in the Senate. So it was definitely a bill that was, you know, we felt was targeting marijuana consumers. The language was so broad that it would basically allow a law enforcement officer to remove a child from a home if you were caught manufacturing marijuana products. And that is broad enough to include baking brownies with marijuana. So it was a really scary moment, but again, building and working with the other groups on the ground, we're able to put together a really strong alliance to defeat those efforts. Of course, now that we're in Colorado, we've moved past, you know, the effort of actually pushing for legalization. We now have industry involved as well. So some of the same people that, you know, I worked with side by side doing, you know, gathering signatures or making phone calls or knocking doors for Amendment 64 have moved over into the industry side of the legalization movement. And of course, there's going to be some times that you're going to, you know, not necessarily agree 100% on some efforts. For example, with, you know, the city of Denver, they're struggling right now for marijuana adult use facilities. And there's a divide with the industry and consumers right now because the industry, of course, is looking out to make sure that their doors stay open, make sure that they're paying their dues in regard to being mindful of the regulations in place. And you have consumers on the ground that are fighting for these clubs, but there's not any common ground at this point. But, you know, in some places where we have found common ground with the industry is looking at extending the hours of operation, right? Because that's something that both consumers and business owners can agree upon, that we could, you know, build an alliance with several businesses in the city of Denver to come together and say, hey, we do need to extend our hours of operation to, you know, midnight as the state allows. And again, that not only benefits the business because of the revenue that's added, but it also provides an opportunity for marijuana consumers to continue to have access to safe and affordable marijuana, you know, because city of Denver closes its largest marijuana market in the country right now, and most of the facility, where all of the facilities close at 7 p.m., you know, and that's not very conducive to actually eliminating the black market. And, you know, talking to state regulators, that's why they went with the midnight as the recommendation for these marijuana shops to stay open. Because they blatantly said, we understand that marijuana dealers don't close at 7. You know, they continue to sell marijuana throughout the evening. So in order to be competitive with the black market, we have to mirror what, or try to anyhow, mirror as much as we can what their activities are. So always a good opportunity to find, you know, common ground with groups such as NCIA. Of course, they're more of the national organization, but in Colorado we have the Marijuana Industry Group and the Cannabis Business Alliance. Of course, they're focused mainly on fighting for banking and fair taxation, so they're not always going to align with consumers, but they are good resources to reach out to. From what I've seen, anti-reform groups, we've all heard the rhetoric as, you know, we've been fighting for legalization over the years. The sky's going to fall. It's going to be terrible for the children. There's going to be mass accidents. World War III is around the corner if we legalize marijuana. That's pretty much the same rhetoric that they continue to post-legalization. Even after it was a constitutional amendment in our state, the folks that were anti continued to beat that anti-drum. The great thing about Colorado was the regulators and the lawmakers that were involved in this process at this point didn't want to play that game. You know, so when anytime someone stood up and tried to provide public testimony that was misleading or suggesting that 30 children had just died from one joint in California, they were pressed to provide some type of evidence instead of just their personal opinion. So that, of course, tampered down a lot of the rhetoric that has been so prominent leading up to the actual legalization in some of these states. So basically, reefer madness is, you know, no longer relevant now that states have an opportunity to capture revenue from the sale of recreational marijuana. This legislative session we just wrapped up here in Colorado. Two of the most significant pieces of legislation that, you know, moved out of the State House and is on its way to be signed by the governor is SB 15-014, known as the Caregiver Bill. There was a lot of controversy around this bill just because it forced the Colorado medical patients operating as caregivers to actually register their plant counts with the state. This, you know, was viewed by a lot of people as the state attempting to crack down and eliminate the medical market, but they're just simply trying to rid the medical market of the gray areas that existed. There was a tremendous amount of pushback from patients across the state, understandably. So they worked with legislators to include an amendment to a bill that allows children to take their medical marijuana to school with them. So that was a huge accomplishment for the children in our state. Of course, a lot of you know we have marijuana refugees moving there from all over the country. So it's saddening to read the news to see that a child was denied his medical marijuana and, you know, experienced an epileptic seizure at school, you know, whenever we have people given Ritalin and just other basic medications to their children. Another one that was really exciting for me is HB 1267. Basically, it approves the use of medical marijuana for folks on probation. So like our friend Chris here, he wouldn't have to worry about smoking medical marijuana while on probation. There would be, protections provided to him through that bill. Some of the regulatory shortfalls that we're still dealing with, as Keith alluded to earlier, it's an ongoing battle we've had since the first piece of legislation that was passed in 2013. We've continued to have emergency rulemaking sessions where, again, we bring stakeholders from, you know, diverse backgrounds to the table and actually have a conversation about how to, for example, the edibles have been, you know, a pain in the ass for a lot of folks in Colorado, specifically the industry, just because of the excessive regulations, packaging, things that people are trying to implement to protect, you know, the children and, of course, be mindful of public safety. Banking continues to be a big issue. Again, to I think it was Keith's point, it's not just an issue for businesses, but as a consumer, I don't like carrying around $200 in cash down, you know, down the street to go buy a little bit of marijuana. I'd like to be able to use a card or have access to, you know, the same banking options that other traditional businesses have. So, you know, looking back at once we rolled out legalization in the beginning of 2014, law enforcement was dispatched across the city to the dispensaries that actually had their licenses approved, not really for the business, but for the patrons standing outside of the business because they're an easy target. You have 100 people lined up outside of a door, all $200-$300 in their pocket. It's a very easy target. And so that's where most of the law enforcement was focusing their attention on. So again, the banking goes well beyond just the need of, you know, the industry. It goes to the consumers as well. Adult use facilities by far continues to be one of the biggest problems in Colorado. In Denver alone, we've seen a 461% increase in tickets for public consumption of marijuana. This, you know, when you hear that statistic, I'm sure some of you envision that people are just running down the street smoking joints and just having a great time. That's actually not the case. We've worked with the Denver City Council and we've worked with state lawmakers to at least provide the framework to allow people to gather and consume marijuana. Because as our state allows in the House Bill 1284, we actually allow folks, as many of you probably know, we allow out-of-state IDs to purchase marijuana. But we don't allow them a place to go. And so it's created a huge problem. And so for someone like myself who really got into the legalization of marijuana, the movement to end the social injustice that comes along with the war on drugs, you know, it's disheartening to see that we have made such progress, but at the same time, we're increasing tickets on the back end on other issues. So that's just a couple of the shortfalls that I think the state will continue to experience and deal with over the next few months. So.